One particularly bright circular object has been observed moving through Earth's skies since the beginning of human history. Every person on the planet has seen this object. We call it the moon. Although this object is identified, at least we have a name for it and we know where it is. The moon cannot be hastily disqualified as a UFO. Despite six visits by U.S. astronauts between 1969 and 1972, the moon remains a riddle to scientists in many regards. The solution to these riddles could indicate an alien aspect of our familiar moon. Before the Apollo missions, lunar scientists longed for a time when humans could walk on the moon's surface. By studying the makeup of our satellite, they hoped to resolve some of the mysterious and mysteries of our planet and our solar system and how it came into existence. Well-known space expert and the first chairman of the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, NASA, Lunar Explorer Committee Dr. Robert Jastrow has stated the moon is the Rosetta Stone of the planets. And this is from Jim Marr's Alien Agenda, 1997. The chapter is The Moon as the Greatest UFO. And I'm bringing in the show. This is Paratruther, ladies and gentlemen. This is part two of the UFO series that we're doing. And I'm doing that because we're not going to just talk about the moon landing or just that one aspect of the moon. This has been a roundtable discussion between myself and Mr. Anderson and Chris Graves for a few months now. We've been talking about just how weird the moon is, like with all of its, you know, again, the anomalies, the lights that are seen on the moon going back centuries through astronomers that have noticed things that are moving. There's the structures on the moon, other things like that. The fact that, you know, you can go back into ancient cultures. We're going to get into that a little bit. There's supposedly a time before the moon, especially some sub-Saharan African cultures believe in that, and we'll get into that a little bit. But I want to introduce my two co-hosts. We've got Researcher Without Peer. I'll introduce Chris Graves first. Welcome back to Paratruther, Chris. Good to see you.
Always great to see and hear you guys, Mr. Anderson, Mr. Arterburn. And I just want to say, Mr. Arterburn, congratulations on a great appearance on Tinfoil Hat with Sam Tripoli. I really enjoyed the hell out of that.
Oh, well, thank you, Chris. I appreciate that, brother. I've heard you on Tinfoil Hat, so I'm just trying to make sure I followed in your footsteps the right way.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Tony.
Everywhere I've gone, Chris has been there first. I'm like, thanks, man. You know, like I'm trying to go on a new show. Like, is Chris Graves? I know Chris Graves. Like, oh, okay. Yeah, he's been there before me. We brought back Mr. Anderson, his brain, his insight, his research. Thank you for being here, Mr. Anderson.
Yeah, I'm excited about this. There's a lot of interesting information about the moon, especially about it being more like a hollow artificial object than anything else. But I had a little reading too. I wanted to share this quote to try to get the juices flowing for the episode. It said, looking at all the anomalies and unanswered questions about the moon, the best explanation for the moon is an observational error. It doesn't exist. Irwin Shapiro, Sanitation Department, Longview, Texas. There you have it, folks. No, I'm just kidding. I think that's Ben Shapiro's uncle, actually.
Oh, is it? Okay. A source I can trust fully. Somebody I really respect.
I'm making light of it, but there are lots of quotes from astrophysicists and scientists at NASA saying we can't really explain this thing very well. So I'm looking forward to diving into that with you guys.
Yeah, that's the whole point around this is like we it's hard to prove, you know, any of this. This is all mostly speculative about the moon's origins, because if you really even just track popular scientific belief, you'll see that most of the leading experts, lunar experts, whatever you want to call them, lunatics perhaps, they believe that the moon is older than the Earth, which is weird because a lot of the original theories was that the moon's about a quarter of the size of the Earth, if I'm not mistaken. So a lot of the original science behind that was it formed as the Earth was forming, and like maybe it was like collisions of things, and it formed out and got into our orbit. But it really just appears that it's an older, separate entity. It's its own thing. And we just went through on the 8th here of April, we went through the eclipse, and I was here in Branson, Missouri. And, you know, it was in the totality. So I got just, it darkened pretty much everything out. And that was really interesting. But as Mr. Anderson's brought up to me many times, I mean, you realize the mathematics that has to go behind that. For one, the moon doesn't rotate. It doesn't have a rotation. It's static. And then it has the ability to, every so often, have the exact same mass to blot out the sun, which, I mean, if you think about that rationally, is a spherical object, you know, as a satellite, and then just being in direct proportion of the sun at that exact time, and just, what is it, 400? It's 400 times smaller.
Yeah, the 93 million miles that came up on the tin foil hat as well.
Right, 93. There's the Crowley numbers in it. But am I right about that? I mean, you want to elucidate a little bit on that, Mr. Anderson?
Yeah, because a lot of the coincidences, I mean, I think the best argument is, well, if they were any other different, you wouldn't be able to observe all these fantastic things. It's like, fair enough. But yeah, even our ability to view solar eclipses, I mean, most people don't understand. That's what validated Einstein's general theory of relativity. Because when he came up with it, they're like, it's just a theory. What's the experiment? And that was the experiment. And because of that perfect solar eclipse, Einstein predicted you'd be able to see things that were slightly behind the sun due to the bending or warping of space-time, and you can. So I don't know. You know, I always come from this as a Christian, but I think a lot of these things were put into place and God made them remarkable. So you could look to God and say, surely this was part of a design. Or if you're of an alternate field of thought, you're in a simulation or something. But you're right. They don't have a really good theory to explain how the moon got there. There's the capture theory, but the Earth's gravity isn't strong enough to capture something as large as the moon. There's the accretion theory is what I think it's called, where they all formed from, you know, similar materials around the same time. But that's not true because the moon is made up differently than the Earth. The Earth has an iron core and all sorts of things. And as you pointed out, Tony, rocks and sediment or whatever you want to call it on the top of the moon are actually older than further down. That only happens on the Earth when you mine. And then there are some others. And you mentioned the giant impact theory, and I think that's the most popular. But there's really not a consensus. So the idea is, how did it get here? Why is it here? And why is it so strange?
Well, there's another theory that I kind of buy into. I don't know. I kind of call it a gut feeling or whatever. But I really do feel like it is some kind of ancient spacecraft. And I know when I say spacecraft, people are probably rolling their eyes like, by me calling the moon a UFO, basically putting it into place to kind of sustain life on our planet. But I mean, the thing rang like a bell in like 1967 when a satellite crashed to the surface. It rang like a bell for a few hours, I believe. And I haven't really been satisfied with all the other explanations from like NASA and stuff. Like,
well, they kept doing it too, Chris.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, even one of the Apollo missions, Apollo 12, maybe, I believe, they deliberately crashed like something on the surface of the moon to test the theory of that the bell thing. Is that what you're referring to, Mr. Anderson?
Yeah, so Apollo 17, they did it another time, and I believe the project was called Chapel Bell, because the first time they had seismographs, and it was unexpected, like you pointed out, it rang like an hour. Then they did it again with something heavier, like a heavier lunar module or something like that, rang for 3 hours. So they said this shouldn't happen. And one of the weirder things that happened is the intensity of the resonance or whatever was bouncing around actually picked up further down, meaning the material seemed less dense. So have you ever, I'm sure people have heard of whisper rooms and things like that, but it's a similar mode of operation, right? So if you have something that's very dense and then something inside of it that's less dense, you can actually have sound propagate for longer lengths of time. And these are called resonators. And then like the field of optics and photonics, they call them whispering gallery mode resonators or microtoroid resonators. But this is a real phenomenon. And generally how it happens is when you have something dense and then something less dense surrounding it. So that's why so many people speculate that the moon has to be less dense or hollow on the inside, because as Tony pointed out, it's around a quarter the size of Earth, but it's only about 1% of the Earth's density. So what's going on?
Hollow moon. Man.
I want to read a little bit more from moving on in the chapter of The Greatest UFO in this book from 1997 by Jim Mars, Alien Agenda. This was interesting. And I remember reading this years ago, and this has stuck out. So when I got here to the studio, I pulled this off my shelf because I wanted to go over it again. I said, little notice was taken when Michael Vassin and Alexander Shogunov published an article in the Soviet journal Sputnik. So this had to have been in the 1980s at the latest. Is the moon the creation of alien intelligence? After all, who could take seriously such an outrageous concept? They advanced the theory that the moon is not a completely natural world, but a planetoid that was hollowed out eons ago in the far reaches of space by intelligent beings possessing a technology far superior to ours. Huge machines were used to melt rock and form large cavities within the moon, spewing the molten refuse onto the surface. Protected by a hull-like inner shell plus a reconstructed outer shell of metallic rocky junk, this gigantic craft was steered through the cosmos and finally parked in orbit around the Earth. And of course, it goes on to say, as outrageous as this theory may first appear, consider how all the mysteries of the moon are reconciled by this model. It would explain why the moon gives evidence of being so much older than the Earth and perhaps even our own solar system. It explains why there are three distinct layers within the moon, with the most dense materials in the outside layer. This is exactly the type of hull one would expect to find on a spacecraft. This theory could explain why no sign of water has been found on the moon's surface, yet there is evidence it exists deep inside. It would also explain the magnetism found in moon rocks. These rocks were magnetized as the moon craft passed by planets and suns on its journey through space. An artificial satellite could explain the odd rhythmic moon quakes as artificial constructs reacting the same way during periods of stress from the Earth's pull. An artificial equipment beneath the moon's surface might be the source of gas clouds that have been observed. And it goes on and on and on. Maybe we got time. I'll read some of the histories of observed anomalies going back to the 1500s by astronomers on the moon. So you touched on that subject, Chris. And again, we're not doing like ancient aliens or anything necessarily, but it's like we're just asking questions, because if you take a minute, and I've had this theory for a while since I've been doing radio for the last 11 years, I have this theory that we, you know, again, you can have your own opinions on the moon landing and the space program and what if we live on a plane or if we live in a, you know, on a spinning ball in space. That's fine. That's a great argument to have.
Right.
But my concern is that we stopped dreaming a long time ago. We stopped looking up. And this, the first thing the in the Bible that talks about is like, look unto the heavens, like look outward, because that's, you got to look to the wider, bigger picture of your existence. And I think with these things, we walk around with these little black mirrors, these little monoliths from 2001, A Space Odyssey. We all have our little monolith we walk around with, and we're not looking up anymore. So like, they don't write, I'm sorry, folks that are writing, you know, today, but you don't write stuff like this. There's not a Jim Mars that's putting out well-researched, published, you know, thought-provoking material. And I said this in the last show, I'm going to continue to say it, because this is why I do Paratruther, because I won't have this kind of conversation. I don't, you know, there's zero grifting here. Nobody's selling anything. It's just, these are questions, you know? And so again, if you want a better answer, ask a better question. So I think it's what we're getting into with the entire aspect of what the moon is, what it is not, and how strange that just watching the eclipse the other day. And I was I think my eyes are okay. I stared directly at it. Am I going to be okay?
Do you wear your CE goggles?
No, mine were for display purposes only. I used that joke before, but I looked at it. I thought it was just amazing.
Yeah.
And then you think, well, there's just people walking around the scientific community think, well, that's just an accident. Just
some people even been trying to claim global warming caused the eclipse too, which I'm not shocked by, but I'm not kidding. Some people in the mainstream media tried to put that theory out that global warming was responsible for the latest eclipse.
Wasn't it the congresswoman? Wasn't it Sheila Jackson Lee the other day that was saying the moon is gaseous and it's like the
yes.
Swamp gas. So swamp. There's the old UFO excuse. It's just the moon now is swamp gas, you know?
So, but I want to say what I think as she was talking, I wish we had that clip. It was just like the moon is in, and NASA's going back to the moon, and it's like a, you can't, what she's saying, it was gaseous and it's very, and the sun has a mighty heat to it. Like she was saying some crazy, you can't get close to the sun.
She said that we're not ready to go to the sun yet because it's too hot.
It's got to cool down first.
It's too hot. I'm like, all right. Okay.
It's almost impossible to go near the sun, she says. But the moon is more manageable because
you got to wait for the moon to block it out again. You know?
This is the tip of the spear, as Tony would say.
Right.
And explain to me why we've had trillions and trillions of dollars spent on national defense, but we don't control the highest point in the battlefield. That's weird. The moon is the highest point in the battlefield. It's the observatory of everything. So why wouldn't you control that if you had the ability to
go back and look at us? Yeah.
What's that?
That's what propelled us into the space race, because the Soviets were doing everything. And we thought they were going to put weapons of mass destruction on the moon.
Right.
And now we take an Uber to the space station. It's ridiculous.
You know, there's declassified documents going back in the 1950s that this predates Operation Northwoods, but the top brass, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, had a plan in one of the think tanks, which to detonate an atomic weapon on the moon to show our superiority to the Soviets.
You were actually talking about one of the earlier plans for Operation Northwoods, where they were literally going to sabotage John Glenn, and his death was going to be one of those inciting incidents.
What?
For us to have for us to get involved with Cuba even before the actual Northwoods plans, you know, to blow up a drone airliner or whatever. But I do remember that there were plans to try to to basically destroy the moon, which I guess would have worked out for everybody, right?
Yeah. Well, there's a great little book called Nuking the Moon, and it has all the stuff that was shelved. Like the intelligence community had drawn up, or the deep state had drawn up, you know, that had later been declassified. It's not everything, because a lot of that stuff didn't come out, but they did have a plan in the '50s to nuke the moon.
Wonders for the menstruation cycles and the tides and everything.
Well, I think of the pole shift. You want to talk about climate change? Goodness gracious. And Edgar Casey talked a lot about that too.
That would do it.
Yeah.
The pole shift would do it. Good luck geoengineering when the pole shift. I don't think chemtrails are going to help you that much with the weather upheaval what that will cause. And I think that's pretty much end of days, though, if we get a pole shift, and it wouldn't matter.
Pretty much, yeah. Nuking the moon. I mean, that was a legitimate plan to destroy our moon.
Yes, they wanted to detonate. That's the military industrial complex, folks. That is psychopathic, Fourth Reich, you know, post Operation Paperclip lunacy. And it was the same kind of mentality. You know, it's funny, you go Kubrick, talking about the moon, and, you know, in 2001, A Space Odyssey, but Kubrick did Dr. Strangelove, and it showed that same mentality, you know, the Cold War crazy mentality. He had Jack D. Ripper and, And then you had right. you had the was it Peter Sellers, Mr. Anderson that
put, yeah. It's funny you went there. That's exactly what I was thinking of, was the war room.
Yes.
And people coming up with ideas like that in there while smacking gum, you know.
Right. Just soulless. I mean, you got to think like, why would you? Anyway, that's part of our history. We came damn close to a lot of cataclysms.
Well, that just reminds me, Tony, of like they were willing to light the atmosphere on fire by with all the nuclear testing. They didn't care. They didn't know what was going to happen. They didn't care.
Yeah, that was one.
And it would have affected them too. Which
they kept detonating the upper atmosphere. They kept detonating larger and larger nuclear weapons, and Kennedy signed a treaty with Khrushchev on banning the upper atmospheric testing of nuclear weapons. So he got they killed him for that. So I mean, one of the reasons that they that the deep state took out JFK was his willingness to make peace. But it's interesting. So let's fast forward. We go through the space program and maybe talk a little bit about this. You know, starting in the late 1960s, you get the Apollo program. You finally go up to 11, and then you get the moon landing. 1972, as Mr. Anderson's pointed out to me, I was wrong about it being in 73. It was December of 72 was our last trip to the moon. And I years later, I would meet Gene Cernan at my friend Congressman Ralph Hall's home and spend an afternoon with Gene Cernan. He was, you know, the last man to walk on the moon. And I got to talk with him and spend some time. But I've always had questions because it's 50 plus years later, 52 years later, and we haven't gone back, which is not explainable. I mean, there's no good explanation other than something happened. And to me, if you read about the objects on the moon, if you read about the pyramids on the moon, which this has been spotted. And again, I'll read some of the history of astronomers going back to the 1500s, observing strange anomalies. Yeah. This is an open question for the panel. Let's say that, you know, we did go. Okay. Because that's an open question anymore. You know, you have to ask the questions, anything real, because we've been lied to so much and it doesn't make any sense. I mean, one of the big tells of this reinforced the moon landing conspiracy theorists is that we haven't gone back. It makes absolutely no sense. That's never really happened before. And it's very rare in history for you to go backwards. Sometimes you do have slides in technology, whether it's those who constructed the pyramids in ancient Egypt, or the aqueducts and the roads and the bridges and the arches in Rome. I mean, we did go backwards for a while. There is some pauses, but it's not the norm. And for it to be this close when we've had other leaps of things, but not in the space program, open question for the panel. Did we get there? Were we told? Did we find something that we can't reveal? What are we looking at, guys? I'll throw it to you, Mr. Anderson.
Yeah, so Chris and I were discussing this a little before the show, but if you looked at the press conference all the astronauts had after returning from the moon, they looked like they were grieving the loss of someone or were turning pale. It reminded me, as we were discussing, you know, first day Trump was inaugurated and he comes out of his debrief and he just looks pale as a ghost. And the meme was when they tell you what the aliens are up to or whatever. But I mean, lots of people say we faked the moon landing, we did this. I kind of like the theory that maybe they were hedging their bets. Maybe there was a plan B and they were shooting some stuff, as Chris, as you said, the B-roll, right? Just in case. B-roll. And maybe the astronauts just looped around the moon and maybe they didn't like what they saw on the dark side. Maybe there were structures. Maybe there were things that scared the shit out of them. And as far as not going back, and that's a complicated question, but I think you can see how we can take steps back in technology just right now with doors, you know, and hinges coming off of Boeing commercial jets.
Yeah.
It's entirely possible. And there's a really good documentary about this. I'm no particle physicist, but it's called The Atom Smashers. And it's about people who worked at Fermilab, which is another particle accelerator, and them losing jobs because politicians just didn't want to invest into the science anymore. And as you pointed out and brought up, I mean, we really didn't get invested into the space race until we were scared that the Russians and the Soviet Union were going to put nukes on the moon because they were way ahead of us. Chris, wait, what do you think?
Well, the question was, why haven't we gone back to the moon? Right, Tony? Just so I refresh my brain here.
Well, that and when we got there, let's say let's run this as a thought experiment. We've arrived there. Why haven't we gone back? Were we told not to? Did we find something? Is this classified? You know, is there a reason? Because it doesn't, I mean, on the surface, and, you know, flat earthers get into this a lot too, that there is no space program and it's all fake and whatever. And they go into but the intricacies of that, I mean, you have to really think that through. Like the pageant of it has to be enormous and layer upon layer of the act. And so I don't totally buy into that because of just the amount of moving parts that you would need to carry out. And then what's the point of the conspiracy? I have to actually unpack it, like governments and foreign policy and financial interest and military. So I have to unpack all that. But so let's say we went and let's say we landed on the moon and we, you know, had the different Apollo missions and would returned and all the rest. Why haven't we gone back? Why we scrap it? Why do we get rid of the technology?
Well, presidents going back to even like Clinton and then Bush and Obama, and they kept announcing every few years about how we're going to have our triumphant return back to the lunar surface, and it never comes to pass. And there's a couple of documentaries on YouTube that kind of go into that whole thing about how some of the footage may have been filmed from the Apollo landings may have been filmed actually underwater. Like some people actually say they see air bubbles in certain segments or whatever. I don't put that past them. I personally think we did land on the moon, but not with human beings. Because if you go into the late Dave McGowan's work, he did a series of articles called Wagging the Moon Doggy. And he does it in such a humorous way that it never gets boring. Like he goes into how like these intricate spacesuits that NASA actually got Playtex, the bra company, to create for them, that had these intricate heating and cooling systems. Because if you think about it, if you're walking out from behind a shadow or you're in a shadow, it's like a certain temperature that is cool. And then you walk into the sunlight, it's going to be like, double that in terms of like the heat signature or whatever. So for the bra company Playtex to have some kind of technology that they still haven't disclosed, like how they came up with that, because I can tell, like with the bra thing, I can tell how they might pad bras to, create certain appearances on females at a time. But I don't know if they had the technology to get into literally turning from really super hot to really super cool on a dime, literally within seconds. I think we've landed there, but with robotic means or whatever, with non-human beings involved. Do I have the evidence in front of me right now for that? No. But I think there's been theories over the years that it's possible that the moon might have an atmosphere and even vegetation I've read about. And I've actually looked into, and Billy Ray Valentine and I have talked quite a bit about this guy, this author named Richard Hoagland, who put out a book called Dark Mission about 20 years ago, 25 years ago, where he goes into these photographs from NASA that show what appear to be glass-like structures on the far side of the moon and like domes and things on the surface, long glass bridges, like glass-like bridges. And I mean, he gets ridiculed quite a bit, Richard Hoagland. If you look into, book reviews and things like that, they call him a quack or whatever, but he was actually one of the people that popularized the idea that there was a five-sided pyramid on Mars in the Cydonia region. And he also speculated that there was a pyramid on the far side of the moon as well. I think Tony brought that up at the beginning of the episode. I think I can't prove this, but There was an autistic gentleman, and his name escapes me right now, but he was from Britain, and he was a computer hacker. He hacked into the Pentagon and NASA's computers, and he found evidence of UFOs, including a huge cigar-shaped one, that he was in the middle of downloading a photo when he found out that someone saw that he was in this top secret computer or whatever from NASA. So he had to, you know, exit immediately. And then the United States wanted Britain to send him over here for retribution or whatever. And one of the only times that I could ever tell that Great Britain went against the wishes of the United States was not extraditing this guy.
Right. Gary McKinnon. Want to look that up. Yeah. He was never extradited.
I tried to contact him to be a guest on Donald Jeffrey's show, I Protest, about 2 years ago, and he wouldn't have any of it. And he actually was a big proponent in the secret space program, because apparently when he was hacking into the NASA files, he was able to find manifests of something called the SS, like three S's, you know, like, you know how the warships would be like the SS John Kennedy or whatever. Mm-hmm. He actually found manifests of airships of astronauts that were on these. I wish I had it in front of me right now, but it was like, if you look up Gary McKinnon, secret space program manifest, it'll come up right away. It was manifests for off-world people, off-world. I don't think they called them soldiers, but they called them off-world crew members or whatever. And he got in a lot of trouble for that. And even places like, the Wired magazine online or whatever, like, did a whole expose with him. Space.com tried to debunk the heck out of him, but I think he was onto something with that. I think the reason why maybe we haven't gone back to the moon was some of the things I just mentioned, but there was also the big theory that Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin, and Michael Collins were warned off the moon after seeing three gigantic, huge, it's the same word, but huge saucers at the edge of one of the craters. That was a popular theory for a long time, and that we were actually warned off the moon never to come back. Think what you will of that, but they also supposedly said that, yes, Houston, there is a Santa Claus too. So there's all kinds of weird, like, terminology. Yeah.
Had they been good or bad that year?
I think they were bad because they looked like they were at a funeral at the press conference.
They really do. If you go and look at that press conference, it's the only thing that could explain it. I mean, you just did something, this massive shift in human history, and you're part of it forever enshrined. It's weird too that July 20th, 1969. Why don't we celebrate that day? Like, nobody brings it up. Like, it's just another day. And if you watch movies like, however much this is all Tom Hanks stuff and
Apollo 13.
Yeah, he did a series too, From the Earth to the Moon. Yep. And what was the guy's name that well, it'll come to me. The director that
just remember that Tom Hanks is a big proponent of the official story
of the JFK assassin. Yeah, he was a Warren Commission guy for sure.
Yeah,
but even in that movie, they're just trying to show that the public lost interest by the time, you know, Apollo 13 and rolled around. They're not even really tuned in anymore. I don't know that that's the case. I don't know that the people got bored that fast, but that's the way they like to portray it in the movie.
Yeah.
Like, we're just, oh, we just, everybody lost interest in the space program. I don't know that that's the case, but I do think that there's only a couple of different explanations. You get, you know, Michael Collins and Buzz Aldrin and Neil Armstrong just looking like they were given, you know, like the worst news ever. And somebody asked Buzz Aldrin about, did you see the stars? And he said, no. Like, when you know, from your vantage point, could you see the star? And so it's a really bizarre thing. And
if you look at their photography too, there's no stars in the pictures, right, Tony? That's impossible, right? Like, I'm not like, It's impossible. There should have been some kind of stars.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm not. There could be other explanations, like the mere fact that the way that the light reflects from the sun off of the moon's surface could
it's very light pollution. Yeah, it's very reflective. That's what I was going to say. I mean, if there's a little bit of light pollution there, and people, you know, will talk about heat and things getting really hot, really cold, but you have to think about how heat's transferred. And two of the main mechanisms, convection especially, and conduction, those aren't going to happen there. So you have radiation. So it might be around you, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to make you hot. And they talk about how many electron volts, you know, what might there might be when you pass through the Van Allen radiation belt. But again, current's what you care about. You care about what allows that sort of thing, that potential to be passed to you. But that being said, that there are a lot of weird holes in the story, I'd say. They're not being very forthcoming. And I didn't answer your question entirely, Tony. I guess the short answer is, it seems like we have to be compelled. The military-industrial complex has to be compelled to do things. So there's an Artemis mission NASA's involved in now, right? 2025, people on the moon again. Why? Well, China's going. India's going. Everyone's going. Now it's competitive on a national level again. I don't understand that. It makes no sense. But, you know, that's the reason CERN is where it is and not in Texas. It's because politicians get involved in the military-industrial complex in this case, in my opinion.
There's definitely that aspect. But people always bring up to me, well, there's not been the money for the budget. I'm like, they spent $7 trillion on Afghanistan and Iraq. It was completely wasted. That had nothing to do with national security. We just blew it, you know, like, so why weren't we doing something that could have benefited, especially when you're talking about strategically, we wasted all of those years in between. We had to hitch rides with the Russians, and now we're at war with the Russians. We had to hitch rides just to our own space station with the, it doesn't make any, it's almost like we did a controlled demolition of our space program while we increased the budget for everything else by leaps and bounds. Like, it's not even in the same ballpark. I mean, we outspend the next seven countries combined when it comes to national defense, and maybe more than that. It's an insane number that we put on national defense and our foreign policy. And then the argument is always, well, we just said, you know, there wasn't enough budget allocation. This Congress doesn't even
like they care
over the budget anymore. They just think, so something just doesn't hold up. And then, of course, you got the origins of NASA going back to Operation Paperclip, and go back and talk about that again. The space shuttle has a very similar design to the Nazi design of their prototype of a upper atmospheric craft. Do you know about this, Chris? Have you seen this?
Well, I know that they had designs for, literally, they designed a flying saucer.
And the stealth plans. They had almost the stealth bomber type, the big V.
The big V, and they had the bell too, which some people speculate that that could have involved time travel. I don't know if I can go make that leap, but who's to say? I mean, they had various aircraft that seemed like it was light years, and pardon the pun, light years away from the 1940s or 1930s rather. But yeah, apparently the Germans found some kind of, I don't know if it was like a Roswell situation, but apparently the theory is that they reverse engineered some kind of technology that.
That makes total sense. I mean, Mr. Anderson, do you know what I'm talking about? That this just came to my mind. I didn't think about it before the show, but the some of the aircraft prototypes that were made by the Third Reich, and one of them was like the space shuttle. And it looks eerily similar. We'll have to look. I'll look it up. You guys, let me look it up.
Yeah.
You guys can discuss that.
No, I'm unfamiliar with that. But I don't think it's outside of the realm of possibilities, too, that there are structures there. And Chris, you were highlighting a lot of the crystal structures. And I remember listening to, I think his name is Mike Barra. And he's one of the few people in Ancient Aliens that makes sense. That's why they can't highlight him on the show. But he had like a master's degree in engineering. And I remember seeing a presentation of his at AlienCon one time a long time ago. And it was all about these structures, many of which you're describing. And the thing that gets me about the moon, too, are some of the the ancient folklore that surrounds it, right? That there are all sorts of legends, like the Greeks talked about the time around the time of the Arcadians where there wasn't a moon. Tiwanaku has folklore about this as well. And then the Zulu people have some mythology about this. And so according to many of them, the moon wasn't even the sky. And then it showed up around 11,000, 12,000 years ago. And I don't know, in my mind, I immediately think, oh, younger Dryas. Right. it just shows up. And according to the Zulu legend, it was two brothers and they stole an egg from like a dragon and they cored it out and took out the yolk and then moved it to Earth. And that's the moon. And I'm like, what the heck? That's so strange. Right. I mean, the hollowing out or the taking out the orbit.
It kind of goes into that theory that the moon was some kind of ancient spacecraft that was put into our orbit to sustain life or right. whatever.
Well, also according to the Zulu legend, those two brothers came from an ancient alien race that had scales on their skin. They were reptilian. And a lot of that harkens back to those. I mean, if you talk about the Anunnaki, it's similar to that. And yeah. A lot of evidence maybe to suggest that what you're saying is not completely crazy. And I think there was a guy named Ellis Silver who wrote a book about this, right?
About people
in general.
The Anunnaki and Planet X being actually behind the sun and orbiting opposite of the Earth.
Right.
Nibiru and that they... Basically, they were using human beings as slaves to mine gold to kind of fix their ozone.
Just the Anunnaki always trying to hedge against inflation. They're just to
the future. Because I always wondered, why is gold worth what it is? I mean, I don't know if I buy into necessarily.
We should do an episode. We should do an episode of Paratruther on the gold. And not just about protect your savings, like I would do.
Right.
It's weird. And it's fascinating. Like,
yeah.
I mean, you can go back into history and wonder, like, why is this such a part of our past? And why is this such a part of our present? I mean, and it's lasted all these things. I don't want to get off topic, but
that is the theory is that gold was supposed to be
terraforming other planets,
the savior of their ozone of planet X,
the savior of the ozone, and it's what also mononomic gold is supposed, like the philosopher's stone, and leading to like anti-gravity and other things, and then you get that as it's monatomic gold,
right?
And then you go, that's what supposedly like manna from heaven was, like God was
absolutely
providing.
It's all self-consistent. I mean, even if you want to look at it from a Christian perspective with regards to the reptilians, as David Icke would say, or he calls them archons, right? I mean, you go through the book of Genesis, it sounds like a reptile. I mean, it's all very interesting. And one of the things, too, Tony and I were discussing, Chris, I don't know if you've looked much very far into this, but are you familiar with the probe that the Soviet Union sent to Phobos? One of the two moons of Mars and what they found there.
I believe I'm not familiar with that exact thing, but I believe Buzz Aldrin was asked on C-SPAN about he wasn't asked about it, but he offered up the information that Phobos was one of the moons. Was it Europa or
no? It's Mars. Mars has two moons. Yeah,
and on it they found a monolith.
Yes.
And Buzz Aldrin, the clip, everyone out there, you can check it out. Buzz Aldrin talks about a monolith on Phobos, I believe.
Right. And they think they found some on the moon. Even recently, there was, I think in 2021, there was a Chinese probe. And they have pictures of it. And they call it the Mystery Hut. And you can look it up. And Tony, do you want to talk any about that?
Yeah, definitely. But before I do that, I found that prototype, the Nazi aircraft, spacecraft that they were. This is again, it's a prototype. It was a design, and eventually, I'll read you about it. It's the Silber Vogel was the Silver Bird, a design for a liquid propellant rocket powered suborbital bomber produced by Eugene Sanger and Iron Brett in the late 1930s in the Third Reich. It is also known as the Racket Bomber. It was one of a number of designs considered for the America Bomber project, which supposedly they were designing to use to take out New York, supposedly, right? The design incorporated new rocket technology and the principle of the lifting body, foreshadowing future development of winged spacecraft such as the X-20 Dinosaur and the 1960s of the 1960s and the space shuttle of the 1970s. So that was, it was a design that, you know, originally from the 30s in the Third Reich. I just wanted to add this little footnote for the episode, just something that rattled around. I remember this from years ago, talking about Operation Paperclip, and then like the continuance of a lot of that mentality in the military industrial complex. And of course that infiltrates NASA. So that's why NASA is never a straight answer. It's what it stands for. So we have so much, the water is very muddy here. And then you look at the moon and then ask these big questions like, why didn't we, you know, did we go? Are we going back? Why did we not go back? Which is even the larger, stranger question. I think that's
Tony, if you look back, there was a theory that, and it was a really popular one. They even made science fiction movies based on it, that the Nazis possibly went to the far side of the moon and had an actual base there. I mean, it kind of goes into the Antarctic base that we also hear about. Right. That Hitler may have escaped to Antarctica or whatever. But there was another, even, I don't know how far-fetched or whatever. I don't know if I buy into it. But the idea about the technology you're talking about kind of created this myth that the Nazis had a moon base. There's no other way to say it. And I think even like maybe 5-6 years ago, they called it, I think it was called it was like iron something. It was something iron, and it had to do with that idea that the Nazis were able to escape to the moon. I mean, I've heard crazier things, but if they had technology like you're talking about, and like the saucer technology that I had, you know, the Bell History Channel for a while seemed like it was the unofficial like Hitler propaganda channel, when they would talk about how literally the Third Reich, they were looking into an aircraft that looked like a modern day flying saucer, or not modern day, but more of a 1950s post Cold War or post World War II kind of aircraft of some kind that didn't need to have like a runway to. You know, it didn't need to have a running start, if you will, like the whole anti-gravity thing. And I don't know, have you guys heard about what I'm talking about? Like about a Nazi moon base? Like, because that was like, even that predates the Antarctic base, like by like decades, I think.
I've never really heard much about that. In the periphery, yeah. And there's some of the stuff that I've read.
Right.
It's kind of one of those question marks that hangs over what technology did the Third Reich have? And again, this is, if you go into, we're just going to discuss Jim Mars again, but he wrote a book called The Rise of the Fourth Reich, and details a little bit of history of our obtaining the materials for the bomb, for the atomic bomb, and the fuse and all the things that were needed. Supposedly, there was a switch that was given to us. Like we made a deal at the end of the war, with some of their top people to give amnesty and bring them over. And there's a trade with the submarine. Anyway, I'm going to get you that book, Mr. Anderson. It'll be an interesting kind of addendum to Oppenheimer and some of the other things that about the bomb. But I want to go into something Mr. Anderson was talking about this is something we were talking about off air. You mentioned it earlier, and, Go into that about.
Yeah. So I thought that was interesting. So the Soviet Union, near their collapse, they sent two probes out because they actually wanted to land on one of the two moons of Mars. One was called Phobos and the other was Deimos. And it's all Greek mythology again. But in any case, what's interesting about Phobos is it's only about 14 miles wide. It's really small and it's kind of egg-shaped if you pull it up and search pictures, but they think it's hollow too, again, based on its orbit, how it's turning, and what its density should be and what it actually is. But they lost both the probes on this mission. The first immediately, like, the story was someone like pressed a wrong button. So it, you know, its solar panels couldn't charge any of the instrumentation anymore. So goodbye. The second one started tumbling, but it took some pictures before it tumbled. And one of them was this monolith. And Chris, that's what you mentioned. Buzz Aldrin was discussing on C-SPAN. He's like, who put that there?
I thought it was Europa. Yeah. I thought it was Phobos. I think I said Europa, but was it Phobos?
It was Phobos. And okay. So what's interesting is there's a lot of discussion, and this gets really fringe, but you mentioned David Icke and the Archons and the reptilians and all that. And then this discussion comes up about shape-shifting, and they're not really shape-shifting. These entities are really closer to demonic apparitions or something like that, to where they're messing with your perception of reality. So there's what he describes, there others, as a frequency embargo. So you can't perceive all of reality. It's kind of like a simulation. That's where simulation theory comes. But they say that the souls are recycled. So they talk often, people in these circles, about the soul cube or the soul recycler. And so John Lear mentioned this actually in an interview, and he mentions a photo from one of the lunar orbiters, and he says, here's the soul recycler. They have many of these. And so what this does is it captures your soul when you die and you just get recycled. It sounds kind of like Buddhism or something like that. And if you look at it, at least the one he was referencing, it looks like almost what Tesla was building on Long Island. So Wardenclyffe Tower kind of has a mushroom-like top. But the idea of this is, there's definitely things that look like monoliths, and they have sharp edges. So on Phobos, on the moon. So that harkens back to me to 2001, A Space Odyssey, where they discover all these monoliths in different places, and they don't know what they're for. But according to the theories of David Icke and people like him, this other race, these reptilians, are using it to harness your energy or your soul. And that's why they keep you angry, is because that's when they draw the most energy. So when you talk about like low vibration energy, like what are you saying? Like, I think a low vibration people or entities is like low frequency. Well, the energy of something's directly proportional to the frequency. So if you're low frequency, you have low energy. So the idea is they're sucking energy from other people to meet whatever minimum is required for them. Kind of like Monsters, Inc., if you've ever seen that, Chris. Right. But it's just interesting to me. They keep finding these monoliths. And like I mentioned a few years ago, China saw another one. So it's like, what are these things? Because in nature, there's this principle you can't prove fundamentally, but you can prove a lot of things using it, by prove using quotations. But it's called energy minimization, right? And things don't have sharp edges in nature. And there's a reason for that. It requires more energy. So when you see structures like this, very far away from each other, and let's take Phobos, something else that they think is less dense in its center, and the moon, I don't know. It's just weird. I think about, again, 2001, A Space Odyssey, and what's going on here?
Well, what are your thoughts? You mentioned the name of the moon is Phobos, and then you mentioned Monsters, Inc. Phobos means fear. It's the god of fear. And that's what Alexander the Great, if I'm not mistaken, would sacrifice to one god. It was Phobos. Before a battle. Let me look that up.
Well, that theme has been all over fiction for a while. They even said in the Nightmare on Elm Street movies that Freddy Krueger got his energy and his power through the fear he was creating in the teenager's nightmares and things like that. So I figure, and like with Monsters, Inc., I think the whole idea was that these monsters were hiding under the children's beds to create fear in them to kind of feed off of. Yeah, am I right, Mr. Anderson?
I mean, it reminds you of Adrenochrome too, right? Because they have to bottle it up when they scare the kids. And I never thought of that, you know, when Monsters Inc. came out. And then as an adult, I'm like, it's kind of messed up.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Phobos in Greek mythology is the god of and personification of fear and panic.
Yeah.
And then Phobos is a word that means fear, panic, or terror, is derived from the Greek word, which is also the name of the god in personification. I want to say that it has the same spelling.
Yeah, and his brother was Deimos, which means something similar, right, Tony? Yeah,
Phobos, moon on Mars.
Yeah.
Because the other moon on Mars is Deimos.
That's not like Damon Wayans, right?
Yeah, it's strange. So it's all this negative energy. So think again, Chris, in 2001, A Space Odyssey, after the monolith shows up with the primitive people, So Moon Watcher and his tribe. Soon thereafter, they get very violent after the monolith shows up. So, and then they find one on the moon, and then there's another one on one of the moons of Jupiter. So that's a work of fiction, right? And then you start seeing all these things line up. It's like, is there something I'm missing here? And even in Buddhism, it talks about the wheel of life, right? There's reincarnation until you reach some form of enlightenment. And all these other forces are trying to prevent you from reaching that, like you're being recycled. But in a lot of the depictions of Buddha related to the wheel of life in monasteries, he's pointing at this white circular object that's the moon. And so a lot of these people say that one of the soul catchers is on the moon. So I don't know. I find it interesting. Does it mean anything? I don't know. But it's consistent.
No, but like a lot of people bring up, I didn't even realize at the time, but a lot of people bring up that adrenochrome aspect of Monsters, Inc. And I was like, oh, they're just reading too much. And then you really look back on it, and I'm like, yeah, it was all about getting as much energy from the scared children as they could. Right. This is a mainstream Pixar Disney film, you know?
Well, I just looked at, so I thought when you said the other moon is Deimos, I thought it was the other spelling, which means the people in Greek, but it actually doesn't. It's if you looked at the spelling, it actually means terror.
Yeah.
Fear and terror are the moons of Mars.
Right. Because there are sons of Ares, right?
Yeah, Deimos, definition of ancient Greek personification of terror, the son of Ares and Aphrodite.
That's why I'd rather just go to Venus. Screw Mars.
Yeah, who named these things? They needed to get laid.
Well, that was Uranus.
That was
that's good. That's good timing, Chris. I don't know. You missed your calling. That's a really good one.
My inner George Carlin. But
it's good. It's good timing, my friend.
But I think it is interesting. And there are, like what y'all were discussing, a lot of transitory lunar phenomenon or TLPs, like boulder tracks, strange lights, flashes, and stuff. But anytime I hear transitory, I think of Janet Yellen. And did you know, Tony, Janet Yellen can lick her eyebrows?
That wouldn't surprise me. That's
not the only
do that. I mean, she also can change color if she's frightened and blend into the walls of the Federal Reserve so she can't be detected.
She can turn sailors to stone. Not that good looking. Never mind.
I never know how you are going to react if I say something like that, but it always goes great.
Just throw it out there. It's easy. We'll just knock it out. Yeah, Janet Yellen. Bowing, going to China. Oh, we're going to get off into that, but it's there's probably if you just wanted to be like brass tacks, okay, why haven't we progressed as a civilization? You just look at the people who run this country,
right?
I mean, Janet Yellen was the head of the Federal Reserve. How's our currency doing? It's doing great, isn't it? And then she's now head of the Treasury Department. How's the Treasury doing? Maybe I'm overthinking this. Maybe it wasn't, the 6-foot gray aliens telling us to get off of the moon and go back. Maybe we're just run by idiots and nobody can do anything anymore. Maybe it's just the idiocracy coming to the surface, but I don't know. I think all these, when you unpack stuff and you start looking at the names of things and then you see how much the moon's referenced.
Yeah.
And just all of our mythology and then our popular culture, there's something to it, right? There's something, and we're not asking those kind of questions, I don't think, collectively anymore. And so it's nice to get off of the wheel of reactive politics and stuff that we do so often. I do a lot of parapolitics, as you guys know, and cover it. So do you guys, and we cover them. But it's just nice to just kind of step back and think about some of the big questions while we got a little time on this planet. You guys want to hear some moonlights and monuments, references going back to the 1500s. This is again the chapter, the greatest UFO in Jim Mars's book, Alien Agenda, 1997. Moonlights and monuments: several thousand sightings of gaseous clouds, colored mist, and bright moving lights on the lunar surface have been reported worldwide for many years, many by prestigious astronomers and institutions. In 1968, a year before U.S. astronauts landed on the moon, NASA published technical report R277 entitled chronological catalog of reported lunar events, which listed more than 570 moon anomalies from 1540 to 1967. Some of the more intriguing events of this study included a, quote, star was seen within the body of a crescent moon directly between the points of her horns on March 5th, 1587. A small white cloud was seen on the moon on November 12th, 1671 by French astronomer Gian Domenico Cassini, who was a director of the Paris Observatory. Flashes of light seen on the moon May 18th, 1787 by two astronomers were explained as, quote, lightning, although lightning could not occur on an airless world. During March and April 1787, Britain's Sir Frederick William Herschel, a pioneer of the reflecting telescope and the discoverer of Uranus, claimed to have sighted three bright spots, four volcanoes, and lights moving above the moon. So this goes on and on. Like, they have some of the April 24th, 1882, moving shadows were seen in the moon's Aristotle area. A beam of light was sighted in the crater Clavius on April 23rd, 1915. And it just goes on and on and on. I mean, we've been citing these strange anomalies. I've seen a couple of, I don't know if they're real, but I've seen a couple of different people where they've just done the close-ups on the moon, and you get closer and closer, and then you'll see something like a craft moving across it or something moving in front of it. It's interesting.
Yeah. I've heard that too. And the lights on the surface of the moon.
Right.
Yeah. There was actually, I don't know if you heard about this phenomenon, but there was apparently music that was picked up, some kind of odd, weird space noise that they deemed music that I actually have it in the email that I sent, that there was the Apollo 10 astronauts heard weird, mysterious music, and they called it music on the dark side of the moon.
Now, and, technically, Mr. Anderson, there is no dark side. It's not that the it's like
on
it's
the
not
far side.
On that side. It's far just you just right. can't we just can't see it.
Right. Right.
Now, and if I'm not mistaken, I want to say that because of the way that our the gravity, what keeps the moon in the orbit, and of course that's what you get the tides and all that stuff supposedly here, and you can even go back. I think we discussed earlier a little bit about the. Some of the ancient cultures believe about the time before the moon, and there wasn't the same kind of weather patterns and other things. It was like it was parked there.
Yeah, like a firmament, right?
Like a firmament, right? I want to say that the moon that we the part of the moon that we can see because it's stationary and moves is more worn than the other side, whether the so-called dark side. There is it's not dark over there. It's just you would, like that's the way you think of it, but it's just we can't see it, so it's dark to us. And at least that's how I understand it. And it's far, not as because of the yeah. far side of them. That would be a better terminology. So, am I right about that? That there's like it's a different. It has a different. It's been worn a little bit because of that pull. Like over time, after you know, billions of years, however long.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Are you talking about all the crater impacts, whether there are more crater impacts?
It's not necessarily the crater impacts, but the actual look of it.
It could be, though, Tony, right? Because the pull of the Earth could pull things closer to that side of the moon, too, right? Because it would be closer in proximity to the Earth. The thing I found interesting about those crater impacts, too, is usually you'd think the depth of those crater impacts would be proportional or related to the size, right, of the asteroids impacting or making the impact. But loosely speaking, they're not because it's like a hardened shell. So they penetrate about the same depth, which is interesting. But as far as the far side or the dark side, as Pink Floyd would say, I wish I knew what that looked like. And I'm smiling right now because I'm laughing at the idea of that's what maybe frightened the astronauts on Apollo 11 is whatever they saw back there. I mean, that'd be a perfect hiding spot. I mean, think about it. How'd it get there? It's the largest moon. I mean, people have argued or made good cases for it. It's really more like a dual planet system. And it's like, well, if you're looking for Nibiru, maybe it's right out right up there, because they're talking about it parking, you know, 11,000, 12,000 years ago, multiple cultures across different continents, right? Talking about firmaments and things like that. I mean, it's all very self-consistent at the very least. Chris, are you going to say something?
Yeah, no, in terms of Richard Hoagland, the guy that I mentioned earlier, he wrote the book Dark Mission and a few other books. He kind of speculates that there was some kind of these glass domes that are in photographs from the far side of the moon. He kind of speculates that there was some kind of mining operation going on in what it appeared like, that maybe because, you know, the idea that the moon is hollow is because it's been being mined for some kind of minerals that we're not privy to, like as the public is not privy to, but that was his whole theory, was that it was a mining operation on the far side of the moon, in that. Well, that would make a lot of sense of what you guys are saying. You know,
yeah. So the rocks and the sediment found on top is actually older, and that's consistent with what we find on Earth when we're mining. And it has things that you wouldn't naturally think would be there. Like I read uranium-236 is found on the moon. That's not a naturally occurring radioactive element. So all of those are very peculiar aspects of the moon. And when they try to date the moon, it's actually older than the Earth, according to their estimates. Like, how do you explain that?
And yet we're supposed to believe that the moon came from the Earth, right? As one of the theories is as a part of a collision, like Tony was saying earlier.
Right.
And I've even read, I don't know how accurate this is, but I even read that the moon is actually made up of something different than the Earth, too.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if that's true or not.
Yeah, speculative, but
right.
It doesn't make any sense. Like our the fact that it's stationary too,
right?
And it doesn't have a rotation,
right?
Is very odd. You know, it doesn't have its own. It doesn't seem to fit, but it somehow does. And then, you know, the exact mass, if I'm using that correctly, Mr. Anderson, of the size of the moon in proportion to the distance from the sun to completely block it out 100%. Like think about like the mathematical chances of that. It's not really possible to do it by chance.
Right. Tony, can I actually share the screen with you real quick? Sure. An article.
Well, what about me, Chris? What if I don't want to see it?
Mr. Anderson. Touche, sir. Touche. Do you agree? Would you like to see something from an article?
You'll have to click. Is this like in Texas if you want to watch something like an adult channel now or something?
No, it's not Pornhub. I swear it's not Pornhub. I would let you know.
It says blocked, dude. It says, yeah.
How would you know, Mr. Anderson? What is it like?
Oh, I read about it.
I read about it.
It showed up on my phone.
My research. Yeah. I was researching for the show. Yeah. Okay.
Doing research.
Do you guys see on the screen?
Yeah, let me add it to the screen.
Okay.
China says rover discovered glass spheres on the dark side of the moon.
The globules. The
globules simply blow your mind.
Hmm. Yeah, so they found something recently, too. And it kind of reminds me of Richard Hoagland's photographs of the glass dome structures on the far side of the moon.
Right.
And I think, just going back to that picture, I mean, that's what they discovered, apparently. And that's China, so do with it what you will, but I don't see why they would be hiding stuff. I mean, they, you know.
I just like whatever structure they found, China, that people speculate could be related to one of those soul catchers. They just called it the mystery hut.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like something you found on like a 1980s game.
Don't go inside the mystery hut. I don't want to.
What do we got for him, Bob? You know.
Yeah.
Got a new washer and dryer.
But first, you got to guess how much it cost.
So, yeah, so they found some weird stuff. It's on the moon. It's like we're being mooned by the moon or whatever. You know, there you go. Yeah. And then monoliths, of course, we had the whole rash of monoliths on Earth, and then they just disappeared. And it was during the lock, you know, the COVID era, whatever. I still don't know what to make of that, you know, out in the desert of certain states. This weird music or sounds, or what they call it, music or whatever, for some reason. But yeah, the moon is probably one of our biggest oddities, you know. I don't know if that's too bold of a statement, but
no, I. Again, if you were an advanced civilization,
yeah,
and you wanted to monitor from afar, from a safe distance, and be able to, you know, go back and forth and not interfere, or at least
right.
If you what did they call that in Star Trek? It's one of their principles where you can't intervene. You know what I'm talking about, Chris?
Yeah, it was like the prime directive.
The prime directive, that's right. Yeah. It's the prime directive. You can't intervene. So let's say they're adhering to some sort of prime directive. I don't know. It's respect. Let's say if there is, that would be the perfect vantage point, right? And exactly. It's one of those questions like, why haven't we been back? And I don't know. That's
Want to know something. In pop culture, I'm a big comic book fan, a big superhero fan. And the comic books, Inhumans, for anyone out there, or even they made a movie called The Eternals, and it kind of went on that theory. The Inhumans and the Eternals went on the idea that this super, like, far advanced race of beings were actually the ones that were responsible for the creation of human beings on Earth. And that the Inhumans and the Eternals actually resided on the far side of the moon to kind of look after their pet project or their zoo planet that they set up, or the grand experiment. I mean, even the Alien movies, you know, with Sigourney Weaver, they had the prequel there. Prometheus went into the ancient astronaut. Yeah. They went into that ancient astronaut theory that we were created by some kind of a far advanced civilization
that weren't and nice.
And that the whole idea behind Prometheus, and it kind of craps all over human beings in that movie, is that the whole reason why the xenomorph alien was created also by the same civilization that created the engineers. They created the xenomorphs to kill off their exactly, and that we were a disease that they had to create the xenomorphs to cleanse the palate, if you will. So that idea is in pop culture, you know, that, you know, and I don't want to offend any religious people, but I mean,
no,
the idea that maybe we were created by aliens or extraterrestrial, interdimensional, whatever you want to call it. I'm open to anything, any idea. I mean, you look at like Egypt and things like that, the Mayans and things, they just disappearing and things. And, you know, it's not that far fetched to me. And even when people suggest, and this, Tony, I don't know, might get a lot of people upset, but the idea that maybe even certain figures throughout history, like a Jesus Christ or
you watch whoever,
may have been an extra.
What's your middle name?
Don't say Muhammad, Chris. Don't draw it.
I'm not going to draw a picture of any other. I'm not going to draw a picture of Buddha and Muhammad.
Sketching it out. Don't do it.
South Park. You really don't want to, because it keeps showing where you're located.
He's drawing it. I can't stop him.
I'm not in South Park, so I won't draw any pictures of any kind of figures. But the idea that some of these historical religious figures may have actually not been human at all.
That's kind of cuts into the Nephilim. So when I saw Prometheus, they were huge and pale and evil and mean.
Yep.
And kind of looked like these hybrid, what you might call like godlike creatures.
They're white too.
That's just like the Nephilim. And Tony, have you ever read Blood Meridian by Cormac McCarthy? There's a character in here you should look up named Judge Holden. And he's a 7-foot-tall albino, bereft of body hair, and just really, really intelligent, like lightning fast reflexes, and evil as they come.
Well, and I saw him at 7-Eleven the other day, and I was in between flippers.
Well, like Cormac McCarthy is to like the written word what Kubrick is to me to like film. But the fact he put something like that in there is just made me scratch my head, because his whole role in the book was to exterminate Native Americans. And actually, there's a lot of Native American folklore about giants. I think they had red hair and things like that. And the Smithsonian, you know, snatched up all their remains and their bones that they found. But anyways, Chris, I'm saying what you're saying isn't inconsistent with what I believe and what I read in the Old Testament. There was some crazy times before the flood.
No, I'm with Mr. Anderson on that. I mean, you can get into the ancient aliens theory, and it's interesting, you know, the Von Daniken Chariots of the Gods, you know, and I was thinking of Fingerprints of the Gods by Graham Hancock. But you go, and there is ample evidence to show that we've had contact with other civilizations or races, perhaps. Maybe they've had interventions. Maybe they've done something in meddled in our past in some way. Maybe that's a lot of what the story of the Nephilim is in the Bible itself. But really, it's going back to, there has to be a creator. There's a creator God, and there's one God. It's not, you know, it's not polytheism, in my opinion. That's not what my research shows. If you know, you're looking at the vastness of the universe, the unexplained mysteries, all of that. So I know where I stand, but these are okay questions to ask on Paratruther. I think it's fine. We're going to ask all the, I know what I believe in.
I'm not saying that I'm married to that, but I'm open to it. That's what I don't want to declare like, oh, I'm all about the ancient astronaut, ancient alien thing. I'm open to the idea, but when you bring up with certain folks, they get very, very angry.
I get it. Go ahead, Mr.
I was just going to say, Chris, what I want you to do is just close your eyes and just lift up your hands and just repeat after me.
Chris has an open relationship with ideas.
Right.
He's an open, not porn,
just open ideas.
Sorry, Tony. I was going to.
Our creators.
I thought it was a perfect time for us to evangelize.
To save Chris?
Yeah.
Save me? I'm beyond saving, folks. But you raise a good point, Tony. Like, if we were created by another civilization, but who created them? You keep going back and back and back. Who created them? Who created them? It had to originate from somewhere at the first, originally, right? They had to be.
And ultimately, and we've discussed this before, these are the questions we ask, because you want to get into what are extraterrestrials actually outside? Are they from other planets? Are they from other dimensional? Are they spiritual? Is it metaphysical? Is it a combination of these things? Is it the portal that was opened up in 1947? That Aleister Crowley thought was that L. Ron Hubbard and Jack Parsons had screwed up and let in the Roswell craft. I mean, again, these are stuff that we need to cover, especially in our time. And there's weirdness to it. That's what I like about it. So we talk about stuff that's just way out there. As we close out the show, and then you guys can, we got plenty of time, or just, and you can go over whatever you want to. But I've always found it odd. When I think of the moon, I just noticed that the logo for the Arterburn radio transmission, one with beans on it, she's on the moon. Have you ever seen the one with, it's on the screen right now. It's got beans on the moon and she's listening to a Victrola. It's kind of like the old RCA logo. Yeah. And that's Bean Bean. It's an artist rendering of Bean Bean, and the earth is in the background with chemtrails around it. So it's pretty funny.
Chemtrails.
But I was looking at
There's that.
That
music.
And she's listening to music on the moon. And I was thinking about Kubrick. I was thinking about The Shining, and the weird history of that and the cinematography about Room 237. And you know, the moon is has different distances, but between like 237 and 239,000 miles. And then the room in The Shining is Room 237. And supposedly on the set, they called it the Moon Room, of the Shining. And there's a documentary, I want to say it's Room 237, where they go.
It's Room 237, and I actually almost had the filmmaker on one of my other shows for an interview, but he was way too busy. But Room 237 is fascinating. Whether you buy into it or not, it's a fascinating film in general. And I didn't mean to cut you off, but yeah.
No, it's good. I mean, it's a fascinating film. And then supposedly it's like, it's an intricate confession from Kubrick. And it's some, there's some weird things like the carpet looks like a rocket being launched, and, you know, it has different designs and aspects, and it's going a certain way.
The little boy's wearing the Apollo shirt.
Yeah. And I'll share the screen. I mean, Danny's wearing an Apollo 11 sweater.
Yeah.
And this was not something that got pulled off the store shelves. This was custom made.
Yep.
For the film. So he's wearing an Apollo 11 sweater.
And Tang was showed up too. And Tang is apparently right. What they were eating on the mission or whatever.
Yeah. One of the strangest and most unnecessary changes that Stanley Kubrick made from Stephen King's book was to change the number of the terrifying room 217. Yep. In the novel to 237, choice that has no impact at all on the film or the story. It is believed by theorists that Stanley Kubrick changed the number to reflect the 237,000 miles that separate the Earth from the moon. Entering the room in his neat Apollo 11 jumper, Danny quickly exits covered in mysterious scratches and bruises with his cosmic jumper torn at the shoulder, alluding to the mission itself failing to reach its fateful destination 237,000 miles away. It's weird. Just looking at this, there's a little article that popped up. But what do you guys think about? I mean, maybe we'll do another, and we certainly will. We'll do a paratrooper on the moon landing. But just, this is just weird. Like, he just changed that. Just changed that to throw that out there in like little breadcrumbs, and there's like, I know you've seen the film, and so have you, Mr. Anderson, but there's like Tang. They have Tang in the storage room and stuff. Like, that's what the astronauts use, supposedly. It's weird. If you're into some interesting theories, go check out that documentary.
Yeah, the Tang is definitely there.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think Kubrick likes messing with people, too. I mean, who is the actress who played Wendy in The Shining? Was it Wendy?
Shelley Duvall.
Yeah, she went insane.
Because he tortured the hell out of her on that. Yeah, unfortunately.
And to think about his last film, his 13th film, Eyes Wide Shut. Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman got divorced after that. After doing that, I think it's the longest running shot film of all time, like something like over 2 years, right? So it's hard to know. How much of that is Kubrick just being bored and screwing with people? But I think it's interesting. And like I said, if I were in the position of NASA at the time or any position of authority, I would hedge my bets. You know, I might have the B-roll, as you said, Chris, going on in parallel with the actual mission. That just makes sense.
Hey, also remember Eyes Wide Shut. I mean, this might not have any significance to anything, but Eyes Wide Shut, I believe, was released on July 16th, 1999. And I know this because I know that date very well. JFK Jr.'s plane was sabotaged. And I say sabotage, you know, a lot of people think he was just a daredevil playboy or whatever. There were witnesses that saw some kind of explosion over Martha's Vineyard around the time that JFK Jr. was supposed to land. And I talked to a gentleman that was in the air traffic control towers at Martha's Vineyard Airport. He was awaiting landing instructions. So that was all on that Friday. It was a Friday when Eyes Wide Shut came out. And I believe that Oliver Stone, of all people, also got arrested for a DUI that day, too. So, like I said, I don't know. It might not mean anything, but that was the same day. And also, I want to say that I interviewed a character actor by the name of Marshall Bell. He was the guy in Total Recall with Arnold. He had like the alien coming, like protruding out of his stomach. He was also the villain in the movie Twins with Danny DeVito and Arnold Schwarzenegger. So Marshall Bell, during my interview, I asked him about his relationship with Stanley Kubrick, because Marshall's wife was an Academy Award-winning costume designer for Stanley Kubrick's a lot of his films. So Marshall got to actually be on, even though he wasn't in the movies, he got to get to know Stanley Kubrick quite a bit. And I'd like to pick his brain a little bit more about, like, you know, about some of the weirder stuff. I mean, the way that Marshall described Stanley Kubrick was that he literally would talk about NFL like games and Super Bowls and stuff. So I don't know if, like, Stanley Kubrick, like, I think he did like to mess with people in terms of putting hidden things throughout his films for people to, you know, I guess he was a genius too in terms of his intellect, but I have a feeling a lot of the Room 237, they take a lot of liberties. It's interesting. And it's possible that Kubrick did have something to do with the footage for Apollo 11 or whatever, but.
Yeah. And I wonder if Kubrick knew he was about to be taken out, because, you know, they edited that movie reportedly quite a bit, Eyes Wide Shut. And after he showed it to executives, it was a couple weeks later, he was gone. And I think that's the only movie he actually puts himself in the scene where he goes to see Nick Nightingale, isn't his name? When he's playing piano, Kubrick's in the back at the bar. So I don't know. Maybe that was his tip of the hat. I don't know.
And let's remember that Kubrick also, him and Spielberg afterwards completed the movie AI. I think AI was officially Kubrick's final film after Eyes Wide Shut. And I think Kubrick invited the industrial metal band, forget their name at the moment, but that doesn't matter. But anyway,
let's save it for the Kubrick episode. We just started.
He invited Ministry to be a part of the film. The band Ministry. But you're right. But
save it for Kubrick. We're going to do a Kubrick episode, folks. Just if you like these conversations, please give us a good review on Apple Podcasts. And
I think Kubrick's still on the moon, though. I think he's actually on the moon. He survived whatever kind of hit it was, and he's in the pyramid.
The only thing I took away from the entire episode, Chris, was your Playtex bra analogy of the spacesuit or something.
And where you're located.
And where you're located. And how you're drawing the Prophet Muhammad right now.
Right. Yeah. No South Park. No South Park. No. No Hebdo.
I can't stop him, ladies.
I'm no Charlie Hebdo or whatever his name was. Or whatever. Yeah. And I'm not drawing nothing. Nothing.
All right, folks. Well, I want to. Okay, so Mr. Anderson doesn't want you to find him or any. Are you working on anything you want to promote besides our own shows, Mr. Anderson? I just want to make sure. I don't want to exclude you.
I'm just working on my friendship with you.
Hand modeling? You got any hand modeling?
Well, I got to use him for something.
He's got his
exquisite hands.
Chris, if there. So it's the question is, how many podcasts don't have Chris Graves on them?
Well, here's the thing.
You promote your podcast, bud.
Yeah, Paratruther with Tony Arterburn and Mr. Anderson, and freeworld.fm. I have a few shows that have reruns on there. Other than that, just check out Tiger Tales with my very, very good friend, Angry Tiger, Mr. Franco. And that's on Saturday nights on freeworld.fm from 8 to 10 p.m. Awesome. And American Unplugged, I protest.
America Unplugged. Well, I appreciate you guys. Thanks for the research. Always a fun conversation. And folks, if you like the shows, share them. Give us a good review. Help us out. We want to continue to do these talks. And, of course, I sponsor the show with Wise Wolf Gold and Silver Exchange. And we talked a little bit about gold and the history of that. And, there's a close relationship to what's going on right now in our world and the monetary metals like gold and what's happening with currency and how it's exposing a centuries long plan. It's unraveling right now to control us through the expansion of fake money and the money supply. So just do your research, check that out, guard against what I believe is a worldwide revaluation of all currencies. And that's coming soon. And of course we have the central bank digital currencies we'll be talking about here on Paratruther as well. But always a fun talk. Always learn something. And about the moons of Mars, and now we know what they stand for. And that's another one that you'll never forget that if you tuned into Paratruther. So appreciate everybody. Thanks for the support. Thanks for listening. We'll be back with another Paratruther very, very soon. Remember, in the information war, be a Paratruther. See you next time.
Life is a continuous confrontation with forks in the road. One is good, one is bad. And you could always wander completely off the road altogether and become lost. Totally and completely lost. If you take the wrong fork at one of these junctions, there is always the opportunity at the next fork to get back on track. But it is a constant battle within ourselves. You see, I have studied this concept for many, many years, and I have to tell you that if there is a real devil, like Flip Wilson used to say, the devil made me do it. Now, I'm not telling you that there's no such thing as Satan or Lucifer. I'm telling you this. If there really is a devil, that devil exists in the hearts and minds of men and nowhere else. Nowhere else. For if you take man out of the equation, evil ceases to exist, and there is left only the laws of the universe and the balance of nature. Put man in the equation, and before long, evil will rear its ugly head and present itself to the world. The evil is within man, and that is why it was called the fall. The devil never made anyone do it. If you do it, you did it yourself because you fell into temptation. For until man once again confronts the real nature of his own condition and of the world around him and accepts full responsibility for his actions without blaming anyone else or any devil, until then, we will always be a puppet on the end of someone else's string. And ladies and gentlemen, when that someone pulls that string, we will dance.